It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running for a brand new month. It is the first day of August, 2019. This is The Horn, headon.live. It is where you'll find us, and the power just went out here. That's not encouraging. The beeping you hear will be the uninterruptible power supplies. Ah, good, that's one. Blinks three times, we're screwed. That's just the rule with antiquated, rickety, coal-fried power grid run by Appalachian Power. But we do apparently have some thunderstorms rolling through, so there's every chance in the world that this program may, in fact, become attenuated, truncated, perhaps. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and yep, brand new month, coffee break's over, back on our heads, six glorious broadcast days of fundraising free radio behind us, and now we try to make sure that we get another week of fundraising free radio in front of us. And with that, toward that end, Jesus Christ, really? Okay, so I'll probably be disappearing from the chat room for a couple of minutes because that frontier line just went down, go figure. So we'll have to let it sit and reboot and all of that. And the modems for Frontier are, I think they run on old Windows for Warehouses platforms or something. Hard to say. But so it's the beginning of the month, and we have Bruce's Memorial Challenge, Shirley's Challenge, with $200 on the table, courtesy of. Bruce started it. Bruce passed away a few years ago. And Laborman and Ralphs and an anonymous contributor decided that it needed to be perpetuated. So there's a $200 challenge that begins every brand new month. The first broadcast day of the new month starts with Bruce's Memorial Challenge. That means there's $200 on the table to be matched. If the $200 is matched, then, well, your 10 becomes 20, your 20 becomes 40, etc. And Steve in New York said, I'll kick it off with a $10 challenge. So if you meet Steve's challenge, that means we'll be $20 to the good on the way to this to meeting the first day of the month challenge done in our dear friend Bruce's memory. Okay. Of course, the interface for that is over at headon.live. Under the Contribute tab. Same thing, we've got the chat room tab there. And remember, if you're running an ad blocker or something, the widget won't work at the Contribute tab. That's the problem there. But also at headon.live, of course, the chat room tab, pick yourself out a screen name and a password and jump right in. You will be immediately greeted by the folks that are already in there, who I can't see because that Frontier internet connection just went to hell. Hopefully, I'll be back in there sometime in the near future. I just rebooted the router. What a way to begin a month, huh? So here we are. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and I don't think we could have a more appropriately themed program following last night's pageant. Oy vey. Hi, my name's Bob. If you want to be part of the team, just go to www.bob3030.com. Yeah, that was the Democratic frontrunner last night. Everybody else had a website, but Joe's so highfalutin. He had one of those text numbers that you could use for your phone and automatically contribute to his campaign. Only they didn't quite get Joe prepped enough. So he sat there and heard nine other people say things like go to taxthehell.com or go to kirstengillibrand.com or go to juliancastro.com or go to jinsley.com. And when it got to be Joe's turn, he was just kind of hypnotized by it all. So he turned his text, his text code, it tried to turn it into a website. And well, in the process, he seemed kind of doddering. And I'm trying real hard to stick to my own rule. And not trash any candidates. I got to admit, when Andrew Yang said that it was too late to do anything about climate change except to take the $1,000 he was going to give everybody and move to higher ground, that perked my pink little ears up, because all of a sudden I thought, higher ground, huh? How about that? I live there. What a pity we've blown the fuck out of Appalachia, huh? Might have come in handy for when a few tens of millions of people have to suddenly mass migrate to, well, you know, higher ground. Hey, did you hear that? Hear that thunder? Yeah. That sounds like the opening opening measures of Riders on the Storm by the Doors. Dum 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 dum. It was kind of interesting that Kirsten Gillibrand tried to franken Joe Biden with some language, some really unfortunate, bad, misogynistic, from back when he was saying things like women working outside the home destroy the family. And he just kind of ignored her. And I give Kamala Harris style points for using the phrase "Donald Trump has a rap sheet." She sounded kind of dragnetty, cop talk about Donald Trump, because people who have rap sheets are for crooks and criminals. And then she diverted by talking about what was on the rap sheet. And oddly enough, did not mention the fact that she said Donald Trump has a rap sheet and listed a few things that are wrong with Donald Trump. What she didn't say is that he's been credibly accused by more than 20 women of various forms of sexual abuse, sexual assault, and rape. But I think Donald Trump has a rap sheet was supposed to trigger that thought in our minds. That was good. It was also interesting, and sooner or later, Kamala Harris is going to have to address this. Tulsi Gabbard, who is her own considerable big bag of problems, Tulsi Gabbard called out Kamala Harris on the slave labor problem. And once again, as we've seen her do on other occasions, Kamala Harris dodged the question. Kind of the way Joe Biden dodged Kirsten Gillibrand's accusation of him saying that women working outside the home were going to destroy the family. In Kirsten Gillibrand's moment of umbrage and dudgeon, she said, "I was in Congress when I had our second child. Henry is in the audience this evening." And so I immediately thought, well, you know what I immediately thought. So you were carrying Henry, young Henry, there to term back when you were appeasing the National Rifle Association by bragging about keeping two loaded rifles under your bed. Rifles with bullets in them that had a sufficient muzzle velocity to pierce one, two, maybe three walls. Yeah. And I thought about how the young man who shot up Gilroy may at one time have kept his loaded assault rifle under his bed. These are just some sort of high points along the way in an otherwise not particularly helpful pageant. Yay, I'm back in the chat room. Hope I get to stay there. Don't know if I will. But Anatole's there, Dowhead's there, Jimmy's there, Otto's there, Squeaky's there. Capably moderating is longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who has not folded space because it's probably even hotter there than it is here in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. 86 degrees in here. And yes, thunderstorms notwithstanding, it's Naked Radio. Mm-hmm. Duct tape, Bob, says Sparky. Sparky seems to be feeling some better from his bout of food poisoning. Sure hope so, Sparky. Hope Steve is, too. He said he's still feeling kind of crappy. So, Thorn in the Side Thursday. Yeah. There was a little bit of talk about climate change. By the way, I happened to pop over just for a minute to see a little bit of what they were doing over on All In with Chris Hayes. Check out his segment from last night, The Coal Con. Just watch it at your leisure. You'll find out what a skeevy, dodgy, essentially dishonest affair the coal business is. Governor Jim Justice of the state of West Virginia, who ran as a Democrat, even though he'd been a Republican all his life, ran as a Democrat for governor, got elected governor as a Democrat, then promptly switched back over to being the Republican that he always was. His family owns a coal concern called Bluestone Energy. At one point in time, they sold it to the Russians, and then he bought it back for cheap. Well, it turns out, and of course, why not? Turns out paychecks are bouncing at Bluestone Energy. And the gullible souls who went to work for him, well, they were shocked and surprised to find out that they were working for a grifter. And boing, went the paychecks. There was a lot left to be desired out of last night's pageant. The list of what wasn't in it is longer than what was. And I just can't help wondering what it's going to take to move the needle away from kindly old Uncle Joe. It's not promising. I'll vote for him. I will encourage everybody to vote for him if he's the nominee. But as he said last night, we can vote Donald Trump out of office in 2020, and 4 years of Donald Trump will be difficult enough to fix. 8 years will be impossible. Mm-hmm. But along those lines, I got kind of policy wonky last night. Because I started reading up on a new piece of legislation that's going through the Senate. No, I'm not kidding. The Senate is actually working on a bill. I know, mirabile dictu. You know what I screwed up and forgot? We'll get back to that in a minute. Every program here is supposed to begin with gratitude. And I was so eager to get talking about, well, everything, that I forgot to engage in same. So thanks go out to our first day of the month subscribers. Thank you to Terry in Amherst, where only the H is silent. Thank you to Joseph. Thank you. To Bob in North Carolina. Thank you to Peter. Thank you to Smitty. Thank you to Lauren out in the far frozen reaches of Alberta, the Canadian home office of Horn Nutrisoup. Thank you for our first of the month subscribers. Thank you very kindly. That's how we make it work. And anybody who would like to jump in, well, PayPal or Patreon is fine, either way. But we do have a $200 challenge on the table, and a $10 challenge. If somebody meets Steve in New York's challenge, well, that will be $20 along the road to meeting Bruce's Memorial Challenge for the first of the month, courtesy, again, of our pal Labor Man and Ralphs and an anonymous person who fills in the last $50. We went off air for a minute there. I apologize. We buffered up and shut down. Hopefully everything's working. Steve pointed that out to me. Also, with an email, I'll raise your mirabile dictu, I know I spelled it wrong, with a clatu barata nicto. Well, I'm going to have to fold after that one. Meanwhile, Steve does point out, oh, dear, dear Bob, it's never bashing when bashing happens to be the truth. The fact of the matter is this. Joe Biden continues to show himself ill-prepared to run for president. Whether it's the Joe 3030 or whatever it was, or him saying to Senator Harris, go easy on me, kid, or referring to Cory Booker as Mr. President, because, you know, they all look alike, they all look the same to Joe. He just can't win. Remember this. This man has run twice for president and been abysmally bad each time. Now we're seeing a third time only because he was the previous president's veep. Had he run in 2016, that would have been the customary veep running after his president served two terms. Bob, as he proved last night, and he has before, he's a gaffe machine. While that may have looked cute or endearing for someone 20 to 30 years younger, his advanced age makes those cute gaffes look like ramblings and out-of-touchness of an old man. Add this to the antiquated ideas and sensibilities, and you have the only top-tier candidate who can't win. I don't mean this to be ageist. However, these are opinions based upon discrete observations. His age just puts it in a new light. Yeah. Ooh, the rain's... You know, it's been threatening rain for a while, and by God, we're getting it this evening. This is the first time it'll be raining on the new griddle. It's all covered up and everything, but still, I'll probably have to go and do some reseasoning, but that's okay. Oh, and by the way, a program note. Monday evening, there will be no more in Monday. This is that time of year when the last members of my immediate family come up to visit and see that they come up to see the grandbabies and see their nieces and nephew and me and Agnes. And so they're going to be here for a couple of days, and we'll be elsewhere in West Virginia Monday evening. So there will not be a Moran Monday. please make a note of that. Sorry, but this is one of those family times, and I appreciate your forbearance. By the way, did you happen to notice, if you watched the pageant, that Tulsi Gabbard was running ads? She was. She ran ads for herself during the pageant. And, you know, I'm a Constitution nerd, and I'm a civics nerd, and a history nerd. I'm all kinds of different nerds. I'm a one-man walking nerdapalooza when it comes to how this country runs, operates, how we're governed, how we govern ourselves. And one of the central tenets is of her ad was that she is running to be your, she used the term, your commander-in-chief. Well, she's a veteran. She jined up after 9/11, as she has repeated over and 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 over again. A noun, a verb, 9/11, and I signed up. And so maybe she tends to view our system of government through a military lens. That's okay. But it is not okay when she wants to militarize the civilian government. And so in her ad that ran during the pageant last night, she talked about being your commander in chief. Can't seem to stay connected to the head-on.live server right now. I'll see if maybe, hopefully, yeah. Anyway. Let me get a message to Brother Deacon Asa. No, she said, I want to be your commander-in-chief. And it showed her, like, putting flowers on a grave and wearing her uniform and whatnot. There's only one problem. If you read the Constitution of the United States, you will find that there is a limited set of circumstances in which the president is the commander-in-chief. In particular, the president, according to the Constitution, is commander-in-chief of the armed forces. And there's some other limiting language in there. The only way the president of the United States is the commander-in-chief of the civilian population is if the civilian population has been militarized. Okay? Thus far, it has not been. The only way the President of the United States is commander-in-chief of the civilian population is if we have given up on the constitutional notion of civilian command and control of the military. Her idea, her view of the presidency is on the one hand an ignorant and uninformed one, and on the other hand, dangerous and smacking of a will toward military dictatorship. Another one of those things that would make and it's significant because it would make the United States stop being the constitutionally governed United States of America. Maybe that's where some people want to go. I don't. But the commander-in-chief fetish seems to have taken hold most recently in our zeitgeist with the onset of Dim Leader and the 8-year reign of error from 2001 to January 2009. You remember when he was strutting around with his padded crotch on the flyboy jacket on the deck of the USS Abraham Lincoln, strategically parked just and turned just out of sight of San Diego Harbor. Yeah. And he loved to wear his commander-in-chief jacket. Yeah, Barack Obama wore his a little bit, too. Of course, I remember when the various and sundry birthers, deathers, baggers, birchers, booger eaters, and general Republicans had conniptions because, Kenyan Muslim, he ain't saluting right. You can't hold your cup of coffee and give a proper salute at the same time. Hey, that Kenyan Muslim Barack Obama, he hates America because he don't salute goodly. Right. But, meanwhile, and as Anatole notes in the chat room, he wore a tan suit. And we're 2 days on, and over on my filthy morning habit, the best I can tell, they still haven't found the Atlantic article that we talked about on Wednesday evening, or Tuesday evening. For some reason or another, I keep thinking this is Friday, but it isn't, I promise. No, they haven't found the Atlantic article that we talked about on Tuesday in which Ronald Wilson Reagan, old 666 himself, referred to delegates to the United Nations from African nations as monkeys who still weren't used to wearing shoes. Yep. Old Joe Scarborough hasn't seen that story yet, I guess. What a pity. So sooner or later, he'll tweet something about how wonderful Reagan was, and there would be a certain amount of justice if Twitter would bury him in links to that Atlantic story about what a racist Ronald Reagan and, of course, Richard Nixon were. Last night was, of course, pure entertainment. And Jake Tapper, Dana Bash, and Don Lemon were, once again, uniformly awful. But if the previous night had been designed for Biden surrogates, the so-called moderates, to gang up on Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, then last night was another installment of politics as WWE, and come on, let's you and him, or come on, let's you and her fight. If you want to talk about it later, we certainly can. But like I said, there's some other stuff that I wanted to take a run at, policy stuff, that I think is actually kind of important. And what I'm speaking about, what I mean in particular, is a new bill that was introduced on the 29th of July and marked up on the 30th. Now, that's pretty interesting because markup, a bill can be introduced and you know, you get co-sponsors, yada, 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 and then, you know, maybe sometime it gets marked up. For instance, the AIC Act, it was introduced in April, and we're still working on trying to get it marked up, you know, before 2019 is over. Well, over in the Senate, with bipartisan support, lead sponsors, John Barrasso, Republican of Wyoming, and Shelley Moore Capito, Republican of West Virginia, and Tom Carper, Democrat of Delaware, and Ben Cardin, Democrat of Maryland, joined together to introduce something called the America's Transportation Infrastructure Act. It is to replace the previous bill that was known as FAST, F-A-S-T. Fixing America's something or another. Well, good. Good. It's a good thing that we have, that the Senate is actually doing something. And they went from introduction to markup, lickety-split. It was interesting, though, because when I looked it up over at congress.gov, there's only the one primary sponsor and the three co-sponsors that I mentioned, Barrasso, Carper, Cardin, and Capito. I think you would call that the BCCC. Barrasso, Cardin, Carper, and Capito. Clever, huh? BCCC. Well, and it's needed. We are pothole nation. We are crumbling infrastructure nation. We're crumbling bridge nation. We're fucked up rail system nation. They gave a heads up to Nitwit Nero. He immediately ran to Twitter.
Senate is working hard on America's Transportation Infrastructure Act. Will have big impact on our highways and roads all across our nation. Interest strong from Republicans and Democrats. Do I hear the beautiful word bipartisan? Get it done. I'm with you. I know nothing.
Oh, no, I added the I know nothing part. So there it is, S-2302, a bill to amend Title 23, the United States Code, to authorize funds for federal aid highways and highway safety construction programs and for other purposes. It's those other purposes that I want to talk about for a moment here. Because I want to try to make sure that I keep an eye on this bill. It's originating in the Senate, which means if it passes the Senate, and it would not have been introduced if it did not have the blessing and permission of Moscow Mitch McTreason, well, in particular, I'm going to be watching for positions taken by Kamala Harris, Cory Booker, Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, Michael Bennett, and isn't there one more senator? Oh, Gillibrand. Yeah. Going to be watching for them, watching for their positions on this bill. And before I dive much deeper, I should point out that I understand that, in the words of Bismarck, the two things you never want to see made are laws and sausage. Neither of those are rather an ugly process. Because any huge omnibus bill like this is going to have something in it that somebody doesn't like. But last night and the night before in the pageants, there was no one up there who was denying the reality of the climate crisis. Every candidate, and of course the strongest voice on that is Jay Inslee. But as I noted, CNN is having a climate forum in September, and Governor Inslee isn't even invited. despite the fact that he's got more actual experience dealing with the climate crisis than practically every other candidate up there combined. Never mind. What? Who cares about experience, huh? What we want are optics. And Uncle Joe last night, for instance, said, well, gosh, oh, golly, gee, by willikers, I'll get us right back into the Paris Climate Accords. And people then patiently explained to him, that ain't enough anymore. We are out of time. There was a discussion of coal last night, briefly. Now, mind you, no candidate ever let the word Appalachia cross their lips. Because why would they? I mean, you know, here in West Virginia and Eastern Kentucky and Southwest Virginia and Northeast Tennessee, it's just a bunch of maggots. I mean, there's no liberals or progressives or Democrat voters in those areas. None, not even one. So why worry about them? Who gives a shit, right? But Jay Inslee said, in no uncertain terms, we have to be done with coal in 10 years. Done with it. Over. No more welfare for it. No more subsidies. And there were a couple of harumphs that came with that. Grudging agreements. They dragged Uncle Joe into saying that he agrees with that position and that he always has. There's only one, and again, I'm trying to deal with this from a fact standpoint, not from a speculative standpoint. He became Vice President of the United States on January the 20th, 2009, alongside the inauguration of Barack Obama. And he had, from January 20th, 2009, to January the 20th, 2017, for instance, to condemn the wholesale destruction of an entire region of the country, namely Central Appalachia, via mountaintop removal. He was, during those 8 years, as silent as a graven image on the topic. But last night he said, coal's got to go, and that's how he's always felt. Yeah, except for, you know, maybe when he wasn't feeling that. Which took me back to the heady days of the Obama war on coal, which got dredged up by the Attorney General of West Virginia last night because, well, he's an idiot. And he's also from New Jersey, and he wouldn't know Fairmont from Fraser's Bottom in West Virginia. You know, it's funny, when he was actually elected to be Attorney General, he wasn't even a licensed lawyer in the state of West Virginia. Not yet, at least. Yeah, they fixed it for him. Right. So, I wanted to... I dug into this S-2302, the America's Transportation Infrastructure Act, ATIA, A-T-I-A, and damned if I... There's an ATIA. Was ATIA the mother of Octavian, who goes on to be Caesar Augustus? You know, we call July because it was named... It was named in honor of Julius Caesar because it was his birth month. And then later on, the Romans renamed the eighth month. They renamed that August in honor of Caesar Augustus. And I think, maybe it's from some fiction, Atia was the mother of young Octavian, who goes on to become Augustus Caesar. How interesting we would be talking about that on the first day of the month named for him. So anyway, here's this American Transportation and Infrastructure Act, or America's Transportation Infrastructure Act. And for the first time, a transportation bill has a major climate change component to it, which is a good thing. But the weird part of it, and I delved down into it and read summaries of the various sections of the bill. Well, lo and behold, if you go way, 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 way down to section 1406. Section 1406 of America's Transportation Infrastructure Act, you will find another clever little acronym. Utilizing significant emissions with innovative technologies. It's the Use It Act. Use it. Use it. Use what? I mean, thank God they didn't use that acronym for the latest round of potential opioid legislation, I guess. The Use It Act. Well, what the Use It Act is described in the bill summary. The Use It Act is described as supports carbon utilization and direct air capture research and supports federal, state, and non-governmental collaboration in the construction and development of carbon capture, utilization, and sequestration, CCUS, facilities, and carbon dioxide pipelines. Because, you know, we don't have enough goddamn pipelines. That's right, the old boondoggle is back. The utter impossibility of carbon capture and sequestration and storage, well, it's like a bad penny. It just won't go away. And so this is a $287 billion bill. Maybe it'll be a half a billion or so that we're going to... And you might as well take that money and build make a big haystack out of it, spray it with WD-40, and then chuck a match on it. And whoosh, watch it go up in carboniferous... smoke. Or you could just bury it in the backyard and maybe cut down on the carbon footprint from that would be yielded by setting fire to $1 billion. No, Flavio, not Appia, Attia, A-T-I-A. Or maybe it was A-T-T-I-A. Attia, not Appia. No P's. But, yes, because Flavio just sent me an email about the Appian Way. So what I'm going to be watching for is to see any of these senators who, over the course of the pageants of the last two nights, have declared that we have got to get serious about climate change to one degree, you know, to varying degrees. I want to see how many of them stand up and talk about how wonderful the ATIA is. Because, see, you can't believe, you cannot, no, dangerous word, dangerous. You cannot hold the opinion that we've got to get free of coal at the same time you're funding research that is designed to keep on burning it. Because none of these studies, like from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or the, none of them say, gosh, we've got to get off coal unless we can find a way to burn it cleanly. It's, we got to get off coal. Now, talk to anybody in a 12-step program, and they'll tell you there's not one of those 12 steps is, well, you know, your problem, it won't be such a problem if you just taper off and don't use quite so much. You know, like Rush Limbaugh, instead of chewing up 100 OxyContins for the refreshing burst of flavor every day, that he would have been okay if he just went down to only chewing up 50 for the refreshing burst of flavor every day. You cannot be serious about the climate crisis at the same time that you're voting to give $1 billion or so away in corporate welfare to the coal industry, because that's who will get it. The coal industry will get the money for research and development, and the coal-fired power companies will get money for research and development. And the funny thing is, in places like Illinois and Mississippi, we've already gone down the road of the carbon capture boondoggle. God only knows how many tens of millions or hundreds of millions of dollars were spent on carbon capture projects in both states. Guess what? They didn't work. And the power companies that were running them shut them down because they were abject, miserable failures. The Use It Act. Use what? Use coal. See, there's a reason that Shelley Moore Capito is one of the original co-sponsors, and her being from West Virginia and all. She's going to try to get a little welfare in there to prop up these coal companies that are going belly up faster than a trout pond with cyanide dumped in it. You know, welfare for thee, but not for me. That's how all of this plays out. So I realized, yeah, I guess I'm being a little bit of a purist. But if this thing goes through an amendment process, and apparently all the news stories I saw from the 29th said it was going to just, like, through a goose on the 30th, because they do that when it's something for some corporate welfare for some Republican donors in, like, say, Mitch McConnell's home state of Kentucky. Yeah. And, of course, I wonder if the senators, Cory Booker has a considerable, a significant environmental justice component to his campaign. And for good reason. I mean, coming from Newark, he knows that the bajillionaire corporate capitalists, they never build their big old giant gated McMansions next to toxic waste sites. That's for the poor people. That's for the hillbillies. That's for the majority African-American counties in states like Alabama and Mississippi to get the poison dumped on them. So I wonder if he even knows about what section did I say it was? Yeah. section 1406. Carbon utilization and direct air capture research. Development of carbon capture, utilization, and sequestration. The Use It Act, 1406. Might be worth asking. You know, if you get to somewhere that one of these candidates are campaigning, ask Elizabeth Warren, how about section 1406, the Use It Act inside the America's Transportation Infrastructure Act? How do you feel about carbon capture and sequestration and throwing, you know, $1 billion down a rat hole? Now, on the other hand, there are some good things. There are some things that are absolute firsts for a transportation bill. There's a climate component to this bill for the first time. There's $10 billion out of the $287 that goes to boosting climate resilience. In other words, the ability of funded infrastructure projects to resist the effects, the massive effects of climate change. There's money in here for reducing greenhouse gas emissions that are associated with our highways and byways. $3 billion goes to reducing carbon via vehicle emissions. $4.9 billion goes to prepping roads and bridges against extreme weather. There's $1 billion for installing charging stations for electric vehicles along certain highways and stations for hydrogen and natural gas. Hint, both of those are hydrocarbons, and we have to stop using it. But, yeah, the carbon capture and storage boondoggle is there, too. And the only reason it's in there is a tacit admission that we're really not going to stop burning the filth. Oh, and someone last night mentioned the notion of installing like 500,000 electric car charging stations. And I support the idea of electric vehicles. God knows if I could afford one, I would own one. Here's the problem, though. What was not said in that context is how those charging stations are going to get the electricity that is then used to recharge the automobiles. Big hint. If we're recharging electric vehicles with coal-fired electricity, or even with frack gas-generated electricity, we're still toast. Because, in essence, you're still running those cars on hydrocarbon fuel. Sort of like a diesel locomotive. The diesel engines aboard a freight train engine, they don't run the drivetrain directly. The diesel engines are essentially generators that drive electric motors that then drive the train. And so we call them diesel locomotives. Well, it's the same thing. It's not really an electric vehicle if you're charging it with electricity generated from coal or frack gas. The only way that electric vehicles become a part of the solution as opposed to being part of the problem is if the electricity coming from them is derived from wind or solar. And to a certain extent, from hydroelectric generation. Although hydroelectric has its own problems because of what happens to ecosystems when you dam up rivers. So I just wanted to make sure that you were aware of America's Transportation and Infrastructure Act when this thing begins to get talked about. John Barrasso, a Republican, the chairman of Environment and Public Works, said, America's Transportation Infrastructure Act will grow the economy, make our roads safer, and enhance quality of life for the American people. And among other things, they want to streamline permits for the projects. Cut the red tape. And Barrasso was front and center, heart and soul, to including the welfare money for the coal industry that is, for all intents and purposes, that Section 1406 language, the Use It Act. A country on fire with an opioid crisis, and they come up with an acronym called Use It. Jesus Christ. Checking in back with the email. Ron in Raleigh says, oh, come on. That's what you call optics. Is it just me or does Kamala Harris give anybody else the creeps? The little half smile she gives when someone gets to her. Tulsi is just unpalatable. However, she did look nice in her white suit. Oh, I thought, not going to talk about appearances. I mean, granted, if Jay Inslee or Cory Booker or Michael Bennett had showed up in a coral-colored suit with perfectly matched lipstick, they would have been laughed off the stage. But that's neither here nor there. But it is clear to me, Kamala Harris has a mean streak. And I could very easily see her just absolutely shredding Donald Trump on the debate stage. She's got that sort of nasal twang when she speaks, and I think it would probably go through him like a straight razor. And when she said, like as I noted, when she said Donald Trump has a rap sheet, you might think that she it could, but the thing is, I've had people say, hey, what makes you think he's going to debate anybody? And, you know, that might be worth putting $5 on a one-shot bet with a bookie. $5 says Donald Trump doesn't debate. I didn't get the idea that Joe Biden would take him apart in a debate. And there's only going to be maybe three of those and one vice presidential, tops. Because it only gets worse for him the more he keeps talking. Oh, and I was wrong. Last night there was not a maggot rally in Cincinnati. Tonight is the maggot rally in Cincinnati. And it wasn't just the Cincinnati Inquirer worrying about what the maggots and Trump might do in Cincinnati. Apparently, Nitwit Nero's own staff is somewhat terrified of what they may do. Steve Kornacki over on MSNBC said, at this very moment, Donald Trump's own aides are on edge. They're concerned about what might happen tonight in Cincinnati. This is Donald Trump's first campaign rally since Greenville, North Carolina, where the crowd infamously erupted in those chants of send her back to no objection for the president. You know, those 13 seconds where he turned and posed and smiled while they screamed their racist screams. Today, his aides are worried he will use his turn at the podium to venture right back into fraught territory, but they cannot seem to keep him away from. Discussing it with Phil Rucker, who is the White House bureau chief for the Washington Post, Kornacki asked, what is the likelihood the crowd would do this again, and what's the likelihood the president would say anything if it does? Rucker responded, Steve, the crowd certainly could do this chant again. I don't know. We'll have to see what happens tonight. But the president is unlikely to admonish his supporters. I don't think we've seen him do that in the 3.5 years as a presidential candidate or president. True. Absolutely true. So who knows? We may have a fresh round of racism to consume the news cycle before the end of the program. In regard to carbon capture and storage in the coal plants, James in Illinois says, coal plants in outer space, 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 space. Meanwhile, Kyle in Kentucky Stan says, math and ciphering seems to be a thorn in the side for my Republican family members, but maybe you can help them a little bit. They're saying that 90% of the country doesn't want socialist health care because of the debt, yet Medicare is more popular than any other health insurance program in the U.S., and 50-plus percent of the general population actually wants universal health care, and it's even higher than that when you phrase it not from a Republican talking point perspective. So how do we get to 90% of the people not liking it if the majority do? Republican math is enough to break your brain. Well, it's 90% of the America that exists only in their minds, or what would pass for a mind in a non-maggot, you see, Kyle. Yeah, that's what I thought. Dave from the Blind said Octavius Caesar's mother's name was Atia, A-T-I-A, the same as the acronym for that infrastructure bill, because God is of irony. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you this, says Ron in Raleigh. If I have to listen to Uncle Joe say, here's the deal for 4 years, I'm going to lose what little mind I have left. Chuckle Schumer must have signed off on Atia. One presumes he did, because there are two Democratic co-sponsors, Carper and Cardin. Remember, it's the B-triple-C. Barrasso, Carper, Cardin, and Capito. Bill in PA says, yeah, Jake Tapper was extremely bad. I only heard parts of each pageant. Jake Tapper was the worst inquisitor of each night. Sounded more like he was from Fox. Yeah. So that's just a starting place. But anytime you hear anybody talking about carbon capture and sequestration or storage, it means they intend to keep burning coal. And you cannot say we have to stop burning coal at the same time you're funding notions welfare for the coal industry to keep on burning it. So we're done with the first hour of the program. We still have $200 that need to be raised in order to qualify for the matching from Bruce's Memorial Challenge this evening. I certainly hope we won't leave a challenge laying on the table like that, because it's crucially important that we not do so. So if we jump in at, if you jump in at 5, it means 10. If you jump in at 10, it means it turns into 20. You know how the doubling works. So please don't let it just, you know, lay there and die on the vine. By the way, I had a note from GK in Minnesota. Subject line, Trump-a-soda. Ooh. Just listening to a recent program, Bob, and you're correct. There's a huge man-baby Trump clan fan base here. Fact is, I'm surrounded by them. There's also some rolling coal fuckheads, too, not to mention some devil's diaper wags as well. It's no problem hearing and seeing them wherever I go in Minnesota. It's sad. Yeah, nowhere in this country is immune to the disease. And it has metastasized just enough that if we don't stop it, it may be the end of us. Plain and simple. All right, then. Been a while since we heard from Scott out in San Diego. I was beginning to fret about him. How are you, Scott?
Hey, baby, what's happening?
I don't know, man. You've been okay? I mean, you disappeared.
That's a long story.
Okay, well, I don't want to be nosy.
Okay, well, it's nothing major other than, you know, just continuing to dance with everything. You're missing an opportunity, though.
Yes.
In terms, when you say Uncle Joe, every time you say it, I think, and that's Uncle Joe. He's a moving kind of slow at the junction. And then the sound of a suspender
petticoat.
Snap.
Petticoat junction. Don't think it didn't pass through my head.
No, I mean, seriously, old Uncle Joe on the porch, his hat over his brow, his eyes, snoozing, mm-hmm. and Kate Bradley comes and snaps his suspender to get him up, see if he can, to get him to do something, you know.
Yeah, because they got the Shady Rest Hotel to be running.
That's right. That's right.
Because them girls was naked in the water tower.
Yeah, and they had the dog with them, Bob. The dog.
Yep, the dog done stole their done stole their clothes.
Jesus. The bill that you're talking about, this big Senate legislation that's moving faster than anyone ever thought possible.
Yes.
For legislation on the Senate side. See, you're right. That's a key indicator. Is there a line item in that infrastructure madness for mass transportation, public transportation?
No, not really. Not as far as I could find.
Us and trolley people. To remind me that effective September 1st, the monthly pass for my demographic is going up $5 a month, which, in fairness to them, I mean, right now it's $18 for unlimited use of the bus and the trolley system, which is not a bad deal. I mean, it's, what, 75 cents a day? Who else, what other deal can you get at that price to take you virtually anywhere that you need to go, you know, and you don't have to worry about maintenance, upkeep, insurance, crazy drivers around you, et cetera. You can sit and read a book, you know, or a Kindle thing. So I guess that's not too bad. And it's been over 10 years since they've raised the price, but it's like every time you turn around, it's something. And people like me, I mean, if we didn't have affordable public transportation, we couldn't get to the doctor or to the grocery store or to anywhere, really. because, you know, your feet will only take you so far when you reach a certain age. I don't know. I don't mean to piss and moan about that, because I'm damn lucky to be upright and above ground and breathing and, you know, with a viable.
Yeah, every day above every day above the dirt is a good one.
Yeah, but I was waiting last night and the night before. Well, no, last night mostly. Wasn't that the night that Gillibrand was on?
No, last night was Gillibrand.
Oh, yeah, okay. And I was waiting for someone either on the stage with her or in the peanut gallery of moderators to ask about Al Franken.
Oh, that's no, they are going to studiously avoid that because it allows her to get up on her high horse and talk about what a hero she is for victims of sexual assault.
Well, was she anywhere to be seen when this general, who's going to be on the Joint Chiefs, I mean, she may not be on those committees, but they have an agreement, the Senate and the House panels, that if someone not on the committee wishes to participate in terms of being a witness, I mean, if she's so high and mighty in terms of protecting women, you know, where was she and where was, what's her name the other day? Kamala Harris, one of my senators.
Well, see, that's the other thing. It would be if they raised the issue of Gillibrand and Franken, then that would put the other senators on the spot and none of them want to be on it. And so the only answer that any of them can give is either I agree with Kirsten or I disagree with Kirsten or, hey, that was Al Franken's choice to make. And all of them are unsatisfactory.
So we're ripping a page out of the Soviet Russia playbook from some years back where you airbrush unpleasantness out of history. Is that where we are?
Yeah, pretty much.
Jesus, come on. Well, we are in luck, though.
I'll be honest. I guess maybe the multimillionaires of the for-profit media haven't had time to research that business and find out about her and her rifles under the bed. I don't think it would be dirty pool to ask her about that in the wake of, say, the Gilroy shooting.
Well, and also,
ma'am,
you once proudly
bragged about keeping two loaded rifles under your bed when you had small children in your home.
Yeah.
Now we know you profess to be highly religious. Do you get down on your knees and thank God every night that neither of your children ever killed themselves or anybody else with them?
Yeah, because it's guns under the bed, locked and loaded, ready to go. That's like an attractant to little children.
Yeah.
Who they can't distinguish between a toy and the real deal. And that's why you hear, and you mentioned it zillions of times, that's why you hear about cousin Peggy Sue, who's six, blowing away her 3-year-old neighbor boy, you know?
Or baby brother
or something.
Yeah, or baby brother, or baby boy blowing away baby sister. I think that's the way that played out in Kentucky a couple of years back.
She gets a chance, she reminds the viewers and the panel members and the candidates that she comes from a congressional district in upstate New York with a 2-to-1 Republican majority, and she won them over. Well,
at which point somebody should have said, is that why you were taking the NRA money back then?
Well, that's where I was going. That's where, you know. Who
but here's her, but here's the other thing that goes with that, Scott.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, there's she can't stay in the race much longer. Her fundraising is for crap. She can't get above 1-2%. And so, you know, why waste time beating her up? Because somewhere down the road, especially all these senators who aren't going to make it into the next round or won't make it to Iowa and New Hampshire, they're going to have to learn to work with each other again.
Well, and she is. This was several months ago when one of the newspapers did a big article about how poorly she's doing in her polling and in her fundraising. I believe they put it directly to her. Do you see a connection between your treatment of Senator Franken and lack of acceptance in this 2020 primary deal? And she they must have worked nights on a response, because every other reason was given for her poor performance in the primary race, okay? And Franken did not figure in it, her treatment of Franken. And I don't mean to beat that old dead horse, but there have been a couple of major articles. I think New Yorker or Vanity Fair had a big piece a week or two ago. I tend not to airbrush unpleasant stuff out of history, because damn it, the man was, and granted, he didn't do a lot in his own favor, but it troubles me that an effective, articulate, intelligent senator can be so easily dismissed from the scene, whether he's made
not dismissed so much as railroaded.
Well, I was trying to be pleasant. When did I ever start being pleasant? Come on. But I don't know. Getting back to the pageant, though, there's no debate in August, so we can be happy for that. But it's going to get worse, because you know who's going to be moderating the next one. ABC.
And
their
Jesus.
Track record in journalism is not all that great. George.
You reckon they'll have George Snuffleupagus as a moderator?
Oh, sure, because he's their key guy. He's on their Good Morning America, and he's on their This Week with George. And I don't know. I watch ABC. I record ABC, NBC, CBS, PBS NewsHour, and the local PBS News every night on the old DVR machine, and I watch them. But I couldn't tell you who ABC would have up there with George. Maybe, I guess it would depend on the topics raised in the debate, because they do, I can't think of her name. I can see her in my mind's eye, but they have a national affairs correspondent who's been around since.
Is that Martha Raddatz?
Martha Raddatz, who I think had a mother or an aunt or someone working at one of the phone companies that I worked at in either the D.C. area or Midwest in Kansas City in the 70s and into the 80s. And I keep reminding myself to contact her to verify that, because there was a resemblance in the woman I worked with, her carriage and her facial features and stuff, and the same last name. And I forget what her first name was. It's been so many years. But I've often wondered whether she was any relation. Anyway, I don't know. How you been? I've really totally been out of the loop for a couple of weeks.
I've been having a pretty good time. You know, got the new griddle up and running, and spent a couple of days making.
Well, I saw
three straight days of BLTs, and you know.
That thing looks impressive. Does it do like tide predictions? It looks like it's got a lot of features. You know?
I mean, it's actually fairly simple. There's four 15,000 BTU burners for a total of 60,000 BTUs across 36 inches of space. It will do an entire, once you get it up to speed, it'll do an entire 16-ounce package of bacon in, well, the way it works out, I figured out early on, you got to work fast because it goes fast. So you lay out the first strip of bacon, second strip, third strip, fourth, all the way down. And by the time you've laid out the final strip of bacon, it's time to come back and turn the first strip. And by the time you've turned them all, it's time to take them off the heat, because it'll keep on cooking and it'll turn into just charcoal if you let it stay a second longer.
Now, you got me salivating, Bob.
Bacon. You know, the tomatoes are fit to eat. The tomatoes are fit to eat right now, so I'm happy. I'm delirious.
Now, is that the thing that you can also make pancakes on it?
Oh, yes. That's going to happen this weekend.
What kind of pancakes do you make?
Well, I've got some. I got some sourdough starter funkying along, not 15 feet away from me.
Yeah.
It's got cheesecloth on the top. I stir it periodically. It's getting pretty skanky. You want it skanky. I mean, it's sour. It smells like lactobacillus, yeah. Sour and flour and whatnot. And so, probably either Friday night or Saturday night. And I'd say, I don't know. May not be this weekend because, like I said, I got family coming in. And we're going to have to go elsewhere. But, yeah, you take about 2 cups of that stuff and you make your pancake batter around it. And you let it sit overnight. And it bubbles and gets frothy. And then you make your pancakes. And they are the aroma. That stuff may be a little bit skanky, but the aroma of the pancakes is pure magic.
And how about the flavor?
Oh,
it's
heaven.
It's got to be like buttermilk supercharged almost.
Oh, yeah. But it's not. It's got a.
Yeah.
It's got a beautiful. Well, when they're actually on the griddle, they smell like warm saltines.
Hmm.
And it's heavenly. And then I've squirreled away some of Roger's syrup to have, butter the pancakes down real good and put the blueberry or the raspberry syrup to it. Wow, yeah.
You know who used to make great pancakes? And these were buttermilk pancakes. My great-great-aunt Emma would make these little silver dollar pancakes.
What little kid does not love silver dollar pancakes?
Oh, yeah. But, man, she would fix me up a plate of those on a Saturday morning. I'd be sitting there looking at the cartoon lineup on ABC, Bugs Bunny, Roadrunner. And then I'd switch over, and one of the networks would be playing whatever the current Hanna-Barbera cartoon was. I think Rough and Ready was on in that era of the 60s, and Jinx the Cat, and, Pixie and Dixie, the two little mice. But for some reason, she didn't go in for Log Cabin syrup or Mrs. Butterworth syrup, which I think had just come out. She would insist that I use the light-colored Cairo corn syrup.
Yep.
On the pancakes, which was always kind of too sweet and too thick. But I figured, well, she's an adult. She must know what she's talking about. And pour that stuff on there. It's a wonder, like I said earlier, it's a wonder I'm still alive.
Well, my mother made, instead of spending the money on fake maple syrup at the grocery store, my mother would make Depression-era pancake syrup, which was basically just a sugar syrup that she would make with brown sugar, and she would add a little dot of butter to it and a little splash of maple extract.
Okay.
It was pretty good.
Did it smooth out all right? I mean, it was...
Oh, yeah, yeah. It worked out. Yeah, it was a simple syrup made. And, because it's brown sugar is just white sugar that's had molasses added to it.
Yeah.
And so it would have that richness. And then my friend's parents, it was a little decadent, my friends got Hershey's chocolate syrup for their pancakes.
Ooh, now I don't know about that. Chocolate syrup on your pancakes.
Please believe me when I tell you, Scott, it works.
All right. Well, I don't know. I don't know.
Hershey syrup, fluffy pancakes, what's not to love?
Will they let me try it? Like if I smuggle in my own can of Hershey's to the IHOP or the Denny's?
Well, I mean, they do ice cream treats for dessert. They'll probably just bring you some chocolate syrup.
Yeah, I don't know. Now I'm hungry all over. Bacon and pancakes. Well, where are the eggs? Come on, fry up some eggs.
Oh, that thing, that griddle does a beautiful sunny side up egg. Ferg wanted a fried egg on his BLT, and I did it up, and I had the bacon grease there to splash over the top to sort of cook the yolk a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
And then crack the yolk and let it run around the white, and then just off the grill onto the sandwich. He said it was the best he'd ever eaten.
Now, I wonder if there's any way to poach an egg on one of those devices. Can you get some sort of additional equipment? Like, because poaching involves something with water in it.
Yeah, you could just take a little pie plate or pie tin or whatever, put some water in it, and poach away.
I love poached eggs.
Yeah, see, I'm not a big poached egg guy.
Oh, but you got to have them done right, and you've got to have them served with good corned beef hash. Oh, God. There was a place. Did you ever make it into Alexandria when you were in D.C. these last couple of times?
I've been there a couple of times. That didn't do a lot, but...
Well, going up Route 1, which used to be called Jeff Davis Highway...
And has subsequently been renamed, yes.
Yes, good, thankfully. Back in the day, on, let's see, the west side of Route 1, along that stretch of road, which I'm sure you've been up and down, and this is coming from Alexandria way before you get to Crystal City, okay? On the west side of the road, on the east side of the road was a huge railroad yard. I think it was the biggest railroad yard outside of Chicago. The one up there is bigger, where they would put the trains together and dispatch them to wherever they were supposed to go next. Okay. All of that has been taken away, and it's all housing and retail, from what I'm told. I haven't seen it since they've done all this. So that's on the east side of the highway. On the west side, about 2 miles up from Alexandria, was a place called Steve's Restaurant, which had been around for years. And I remember reading in my baby book, when I was like two and a half, 3 years old, my parents had taken my older brother and I there, and I had apparently got impatient for something and knocked over a basket of rolls onto the floor of the restaurant. And I remember even music that played on their jukebox. It was like an orchestra leader in the 40s and 50s, Billy Vaughn, I believe his name was. And he was famous for a lot of saxophone-oriented pop music numbers. And I have that audio memory in my head even now, okay? And I remember that incident of knocking the rolls over. Well, long story short, later on, when I was working, doing telemarketing in the 70s for Army Times, on Sunday, my friend Tom and I, he'd carpool us, and we would leave early enough to stop by Steve's for breakfast.
That sounds like Good Eats. Oh, I bet we've disconnected. Yep, there it was.
Beep, beep. Are we there?
Yeah, we are now.
Beep. Okay. Beep. Beep. Having a mutual moment, Bob. But anyway, we would stop there, and they had the best damn corned beef hash on earth. And it's a wonder I could work after a big country style breakfast like that.
You know where I get the best corned beef hash?
I know I don't.
My backyard. Because when I brine and then smoke a brisket.
Ah, yeah, I bet you do.
Chopping up those trimmings and fixing it with potatoes and stuff. Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, now it's official, Bob. I am salivating. I am hungry, and there ain't a damn thing to eat in the house until I go shopping later. What will I do? What will I do, Bob? So where are we? Who is, you know, to kind of sum this pageantry up?
Oh, it's going to be one of those nights. Ding, ding.
Are we, am I bopping off again?
I don't want to know what you're doing, but
You're back on air. Well, anyway, where I was going with this is the next debate in September on ABC is not going to have as many participants on the stage because of the more stringent requirements to participate. So who will be left, do you think? And will...
Well, I mean, the September cut list is obviously Biden, Bernie, Elizabeth Warren, I think Amy Klobuchar, and Kamala Harris.
Yeah. How many is that, five or six?
Yeah, five, I think.
All right. And the way I hear it is if there are less than 10 or less, it'll only be one night. If it's more than 10, I guess they'll divide the first night and then the second night, like 7 and 7 or five or 8 and 8, whatever. But yeah, I believe it's going to be a little less cumbersome to have fewer candidates. And here's my question, and nobody has been able to tell me. This guy Yang, who wants to give away $1,000 a month to every adult with a pulse, let's say I'm an adult with a pulse and he's president and he gets this thing in and I'm getting Social Security. Do I have to give that up or is that Social Security plus $1,000?
No, I think I can't answer that definitively, but well, one, it's never going to happen.
Yeah.
And that's not to say I don't support the idea of universal basic income. You know, as Yang pointed out last night, he lifted it from Dr. King. And by the way, the last president to endorse the idea of universal basic minimum income was Nixon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jesus. And what about that phone call? That Tricky Dick.
Well, you being the devotee of the history of that era that you are, I figured we'd get around to it. I, of course, mentioned it when it first landed online on Tuesday. But the degree of quiet around that story, I mean, it's being avoided in droves.
Yeah. Is it live or is it Memorex? Who knows more about tape than I?
Yeah, well, you know, last night as I was watching... it's hateful. But the thing is, it's just evidence. It's just evidence that Reagan and Nixon were who I've always knew they were.
Yeah.
Nixon wins in 1968 because of his ability to stoke racist hatred and fear.
Yeah.
You know, long before Michael Dukakis got Willie Horton'd, there was the Southern strategy.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, people who grew up in that era in California knew that Reagan despised anybody darker than a grocery bag.
Well, and then later Reagan proved where he was coming from with his first campaign deal in the 80 presidential race. Did you read that article I sent you earlier? The one about Jimmy Carter even pointed out the venue for Reagan's first campaign event within hailing distance of where they found Schwerner and Cheney and
Goodman.
Goodman, yeah. You know, it's blatant. And I've always said that not all Republican politicians are racist. But every damn one of them holds policy or political approaches that appeal to racists.
Not all Republicans are racists, but all racists are Republicans.
Yeah, well, there's that too. And people are quick to try to defend them, saying, "Oh no, my Republican is..." Well, if you scratch the surface a little bit, your Republican may not be racist, but they hold to ideas and notions and pronouncements that appeal to some of the worst instincts of our society. And if you know enough history, which a lot of people today don't, today's Republican used to be yesteryear's Southern Democrat. And that was a crop of winners, and I put those in the winners designation in big air quotes. It's a wonder anything got done that got done during Johnson's presidency in terms of the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act and the War on Poverty. Are we going to re-declare or pick up the flag again on the War on Poverty? Because all of that shit that, getting back to Martin Luther King, all of that shit that he was trying to dramatize in the run-up to the Poor People's Campaign in 68, all of those conditions are currently present, but made multitudes of times worse than they were 50 years ago, 51 years ago now. And it's like, people, we've only got one country, and we've got to stop appealing to our low. See, people make fun of Marianne Williamson, okay? Isn't that her name, Marianne?
Yeah, and largely because she's kind of got it. She's got it coming, you know. Anti-vaxxer. Women can't get cured of cancer because they don't love enough.
Wait a minute. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, she made a statement the other night about the dark psychic forces running amok in this land.
Yeah.
And I know that metaphysically or religiously, a lot of us don't buy into such quaint ancient notions, but there is a force in the universe that people tie into that causes them to be reprehensible in their words, thoughts, and deeds, okay? And look around you, man. We see evidence of it, you know? So I'll give her at least that much. She's trying to mention a dynamic that needs addressing on some level. And as far as being anti-vaxxer, I mean, have you ever seen an autistic dog or an autistic cat? Dogs and cats get vaccinated by
all the time, yes.
Every day. But I have never met an autistic dog or cat. And maybe autism is something that only occurs in human beings. But even our closest animal relative, the primates, they get vaccinated.
But see, that when the anti-vaxxers make the autism argument, that is particularly hateful and even, you might argue, eugenic. Because,
oh, yeah.
Because what they're saying is, I would rather have my child die of preventable childhood disease than take the risk that they might be autistic. Better dead than autistic is what the anti-vaxxer position is.
Yeah.
And you don't get much more hateful than that.
All right, Chirp says hello.
Yeah, hey to Chirps.
I have a daily visitor, almost daily. There are a couple of squirrels who drop by, and I put nuts out for them. And I thought that's what I got up to see what Chirps was looking out the window at, and apparently it was nothing. Maybe Chirps has gone all spatial on me. No, she says, of course. So anyway, so where are we, Bob? Are we making it? Are we gonna make it? Are we gonna do okay?
You know, that's what you say in the middle of crisis. Hey, it'll be okay. We'll be all right. But you know, this is the program that is hosted by Bob Kincaid, Little Ray of Sunshine. And what Biden said last night about how, well, you know, we can get back to normal if we can just get rid of Trump in 2020. but after 8 years of Trump, we will never be the same. Yeah, I guess if you're running for president, you got to say that. But I can't help but look at all of this and think that there are some aspects of this that will never be the same. And
well,
some of
no,
it's cultural
no, no.
and some of it's processual. But we're going to... Can you see going forward that a presidential communications team won't use Twitter? It's a goddamn policy tool now.
Well, where are the Scalias, the originalists?
Well, one of them's getting ready to have a cushy job in the Trump administration. The son of Fat Tony, grandson of the head of the pro Mussolini organization in the United States prior to World War II, he's going to be, if he hasn't already been confirmed, as one of Maggot Brain's secretaries.
Yeah, but the underlying thought in my question is, if you're an originalist, if you're a purist, what does the chief executive of the nation have? How does that person have any business engaging in tweets and twoops the way Mr. Trump has? And if this is going to become the new norm, then we are definitely all screwed, Bob, you know, because it's like the inmates are running the asylum for all intents and purposes, if this is where we're at. You know, I would like to think that there is some semblance of rationality in this country and that we can somehow coalesce. And I know I'm the eternal optimist, okay? But I would hope that there is some degree of rationality and memory in this country and a sense of history and bigger purpose in this country, that we can somehow coalesce and find a candidate who is, I don't know that the focus necessarily should be solely on Trump. Because who are you really trying to sell to in this election if you're on the Democratic side? You're not going to win over many people who voted for Trump in 2016. It seems to me the more prudent thing to do is to, yes, win over any of those that you can in the places where you might need them. Okay, that's going to be prudent. But the overwhelming mission here is to engage people, get people engaged who either sat it out the last time or the last few times, and get the young people going, you know, and not crazy, far-off, fringy young. A responsible yet orderly way. You're not going to, there's nobody that's going to get nothing. There's nobody that's going to get everything. But there are a number of somebodies who are going to get something that works for them. And that's the way things have been done when they have been done over the course of our history. And is it perfect? No, it's nowhere near perfect. But it's workable, and it always leaves something left undone that we can work toward getting done and addressing the next time around. It's crazy. It's a process. And people, for some reason, are too impatient to deal with process. They're too impatient and ignorant to deal with, you know, intelligence and rationality and actually saying, look.
Yeah, Frontier's really batting a million tonight.
Did you miss my last minute and a half?
No, I'm just probably the last 15, 20 seconds.
Oh, God. Well, I may as well just shut up then. Because what's the point of speaking if no one's hearing? I mean, And I know it's not your fault. It's your...
No, there's still there's still thunder out there, so naturally, you know, the internet doesn't work.
What, is the equipment afraid of noise now? Is that how bad it's gotten?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's been that way. Before it was Frontier, it was Verizon. And once upon a time, we paid $1,000 a month for a half of a T1.
Yeah.
And it would go down every time it thundered.
Maybe you need to wrap all the equipment in one of those dog sweaters.
Yeah, I need exactly. I need a modem sweater. Jesus, but I think you'd have to wrap the line too, because you know it's dying out there.
Yeah.
And then just crapping out, and then crapping out at the modem.
Well, what happened to this great, grand, wonderful, glorious information super fucking highway to the 21st century that I heard so much about 20 years ago, where even in the far reaches of the land, people would be able to play games and get at least reasonably high speeds and reliability. What happened to that notion?
Well, you know, that'll be covered under Infrastructure Week when Trump gets around to it.
Oh, God.
By the way, I got a note from Jim, who said that when Chirp spoke up, Patches, Jim's cat, was snoozing quietly, and hearing the meow, Patches sat right up. Where's the cat?
Yes.
Where's the other cat?
Well, you ought to see her when the squirrels come by, because there's one of them that climbs up the screen door. In the summertime, I have the front door open, but I have one of these heavy-duty, hard, you know, screen doors. I guess it's a security screen door. But if I'm not out there with the nut soon enough, this one climbs up and sometimes will make a noise expressing its displeasure. So I need to, you know, scurry on over and open the door carefully so he doesn't come in. God, that would be the end of us all if the squirrel ever gets in the house. Because I would freak. Chirps would freak. Well, one day I went out and the damn thing attempted to jump onto me, you know? And they have very sharp little claws.
Wait a minute. Have the meth-fueled attack squirrels made it all the way from Moulton, Alabama to San Diego? Is that what you're telling me, Scott?
Well, I don't know what's in their pipe, Bob, but I do know that they like me to bring them nuts. Lightly salted, because they're the only ones that they'll eat. What are these? Kroger lightly salted, not Kroger, Target. What is their brand name? Archer Farms, lightly salted roasted almonds. And they come, usually there's one or two that come, but they climb up here's the door, whatever that material is.
Yeah.
But they even climb up the window screen on the window where Chirps does most of her napping. And the first few times it freaked her the fuck out. I mean, she didn't know what to say. And then finally she started accepting it as just part of life here at Shea Guru. You know, there's always something weird going on.
Naturally.
Here in this sector of the galaxy, so she naps through it. But, yeah, I don't want them climbing on me, because they've got very sharp little claws.
No, what you need are possums.
No, I've seen them. We have them here. They only come out at night.
They're sweet, shy little animals. They hardly ever carry rabies. You know, they're kind of...
Does it carry the plague?
No, that's armadillos that carry leprosy.
Oh, okay. Gee, or leprosy. Yeah, there we go.
But possums will keep your mice and rats and the occasional snake down. Possums are nice.
I hear raccoons are mean.
Oh, they are. They're vicious. And they also they carry rabies very easily.
Yeah. We've ventured into Wild Kingdom territory. Jeez. See, this is why I don't call as often as I used to, because I'm wound up like an 8-day clock. We barely scratched the surface, and I know you've got to go on and, you know.
Oh, and you got a note from James in Illinois. God damn, Scott, you got the squirrel hooked on salt.
Well, it's lightly salted, just kind of dusted.
Well, now kind of yeah, but now they'll, they'll figure a way into your house, and they'll have to get after your blood pressure medicine.
Oh, no. No, not that. Jeez. Oh, God, I don't need cable TV. This is cable TV.
And by the way, David in South Carolina, Stan, adds, possums eat ticks and roaches.
Oh, do they?
Yes. If you've got possums, if you've got possums, you've got a friend.
Well, I don't think we have roaches or ticks around where I am, at least not indoors. We have the occasional flea, but that just goes with the territory because this is the flea capital of the world, San Diego. But I keep them down with, there's a stuff that I think it's called Advantage, or it's one of those types where you put the drop of it on the back of their
neck,
between
yeah.
their little shoulder blades. And I've never noticed any ill effects. And by God, if you use it for a couple of months in a row, you don't notice any hopping things that bite.
And they do carry plague.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. I mean, that was what the fleas on the rats.
Yeah.
And the dark. Yeah. I don't need that. Got enough shit to worry about. But and my current insurance does not cover dental, eyeglasses, or hearing aids. What? I said hearing aids.
Probably doesn't cover plague either.
And then I'll kind of close with this.
You know, or not. Ding, ding. Bleep.
Did I go away again?
I'll close with this. Silence.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
but at least we know where you were.
Okay, but what just to close briefly on this, what possible good is it doing to hash and rehash the minutiae of the various options in healthcare that none of it will go into law, at least not immediately? Nobody's going to get anything done if we don't retake the Senate. I just don't know who's writing the script for the candidates, because it does. I'm a Democrat, and a lot of it's not even appealing to me. It's like,
well, I mean, I look, I guess I've got a different perspective. I saw a thing on Twitter earlier today. One of the accounts I follow asked, "How much is your premium? Your healthcare premium?" And people were saying, you know, family of four, $3,900. Me by myself, $1,000. And I answered too, and I said, my premium is zero, because I am uninsured, because I cannot qualify for the ACA subsidies on the marketplace, and I can't qualify for Medicaid. So that's a hell of a crack I've fallen through.
Now, is part of that having to do with your state not buying in?
No. We're part of the Medicaid expansion.
Oh, and you still can't afford it.
Right.
Well, see, that's
no,
why
no, no. It's It's not that I can't afford it. I can't qualify for it. I am deemed to be too wealthy.
Oh no, that's what I mean.
I'm too poor for the exchanges, too wealthy for Medicaid.
Now, see, that there's something wrong with the system that allows that. Because in the grand scheme of things, there's wealth and there's wealth. And I am fairly confident in saying that you're not in the upper echelons of wealthiness. You're nowhere near.
No, not by a long shot. But you got to remember that once, even though West Virginia has the Medicaid expansion, we also have a Republican government now, and they work overtime trying to make sure that nobody gets on.
Yeah.
I had Medicaid at one point. I filled out my computer review, hit submit, and then 3 weeks later, I got a note back saying, you're cut off because you didn't do your review. Well, I did my review. I screenshotted the damn thing all the way through. And it didn't matter.
Who did you send all that to?
Well, it goes to an administrative office in West Virginia.
It was a state office having to do with the administration
of Medicaid.
Yeah. Okay.
And so then when I went to reapply, they said no. No, too rich. And the idea that you know how this network runs.
Yeah.
We're not exactly pulling down the big time radio bucks. So.
Well, the nice thing about California, in terms of the Medicaid in California, is called Medi-Cal.
Right.
And it's funded by the federal with, I'm sure, some state money, but it's administered in each of the counties. So that if there's an issue with qualifying or a question or something, I can go to my county supervisor, who is my voice on the county level, and then he or she will put me in touch with who I need to talk to in the county office. And in the past, I don't know yet for this year, but in the past, more often than not, it's been decided in my favor. I take it that they don't run it quite that way in West Virginia.
Not quite. Well, I mean, again, it's the office that administers it is a part of the executive branch of the state government, which means it's run by Republican functionaries.
Yeah.
And so that means it's going to be much more difficult to obtain.
Well, until this last election, this is the weird thing, Bob. My county supervisor was a Republican and bent over backwards to get me answers to questions and resolution in a speedy manner, you know? And he termed out this last time, so he couldn't. He's not in there now. Maybe that's why it's taking longer this time to get it resolved, because I don't have the same county supervisor. See, but the way I'm hearing it from your end is it's like they set it up not to be effective for the end line consumer. They don't want you to prevail. Because somehow it's not in there. Well, they want you to suffer is what it is. These assholes buy into the notion that there's something noble about human suffering. And that's tied into some stupid theology that, you know, unless you suffer along with Jesus, sweet Jesus on the cross, then you're not doing it right. Well, that's just bullshit. There's nothing noble.
Well, look, that one person I saw who was paying $3,300, $3,500, $3,900 a month for insurance, you know, that's $48,000, $50,000 a year.
Yeah.
That's unsustainable. And it's not even that great insurance. And there is no way that under a national pool in Medicare for All that it's going to cost that much. But between the lobbyists for pharma and the lobbyists for the CEOs of the health insurance industry, they have created a situation, or they've created a messaging platform that says, and this would be so stupid a way to go about it that it's there's no way that a system would be allowed to run that way, and that is everybody has to be uninsured, and then Medicare for All will kick in.
Yeah,
just nuts. Okay, it's the bottom line to all of this, Scott, is that our present system is unsustainable. We cannot continue to let the health and well-being of the American people be literally a life support system for insurance executives.
Yeah. Well, and I don't think that people understand what Medicare is. I mean, because I've had it, just because I've only recently turned 65 doesn't mean that I'm brand new in Medicare. I've had it ever since I became disabled under the Social Security rules. And basically, here's what it is. It's hospitalization for everyone who has Medicare. And Medicare Part B is doctor visits and tests and some other things, of which the cost of which Medicare Part B pays 80%. That's not a real bad system for everybody. And I think the current Part B monthly premium is either $134 or $136 a month. Even for someone on a limited income, that's doable. And if you qualify for Medicaid or Medi-Cal in California, they can even waive that monthly Part B deductible. Now, what could possibly be wrong in implementing just that? And if you have private insurance, maybe eventually, you know, phase that out in 3 or 5 years or something, or it make it, I know in Britain where they have what they call socialized medicine, there are golden plans for private insurance for people who want it.
But you not know, many people just, want it.
I know, or need it. That's the other thing.
And see, that's the other thing about Medicare that I, you know, everybody, because, you know, because 65 in Medicare, everybody who gets Medicare, well, let me back up, see if I can make a little more sense out of it this way. If you have the best insurance in the world, when you turn 65, you're not going to have it anymore because Medicare kicks in. And so, you know, you're going to take away these happy union member health care insurance, and the union members ain't going to like that. Well, I don't hear a bunch of, I mean, Boss Man Wayne, it went from union health care to Medicare. I have never heard a peep out of Boss Man Wayne about that. Didn't seem to piss him off.
If you've got fully covered hospitalization and up to 80% covered Part B for doctor visits and tests and things, it's almost like what's not to like. It's.
And so why can't we do that for the American people?
Well, the answer is we can. It's just that we won't.
I mean, after Elizabeth Warren rolled up John Delaney and smoked him like a roach the other night.
And isn't he a weird looking guy? We're not supposed to talk about looks.
Yeah, but... I know. He looks like a sidekick in a 50s Western series.
That's right, Zeke. Ain't right, Zeke. Ain't right, Zeb.
Yeah, ain't right. Yeah, that's right, ain't. Yeah, crack it. Yeah, Sheriff Dillon.
Of course, Marshal Dillon.
But the thing is, lo and behold, he went on Twitter and started pissing and moaning, and he said, "I don't see why anybody would take the time to run for president if they can't talk about why their plans don't work."
Yeah, he tried to rework her retort.
Yeah, it didn't work.
Jesus,
he got the shit. He got the shit ratioed out of him on Twitter for it.
Luckily, we're not going to be seeing him in September. You know that old song, "See You in September." Well, just put a big knot in OT.
And you said something earlier about it can't be all about Trump, and that's the absolute truth. Sweet fake baby Jesus, let us keep the House. Please, sweet fake baby Jesus, let us get the Senate. And
well, yes, amen.
And beat Trump. 20 is a monument year. 20 is the electoral year that the historians from Norblap 9 will look back on and say, well, you know, they had a chance, and then they'll say they either got it done or didn't get it done. because
did you?
We've got to get Trump out of there, but we got to get Mitch McConnell out of there too.
Oh yes, I'm gonna. You mentioned keeping the House, and you're absolutely right. But I saw a thing today, and I posted it on my Facebook. You talk about the House. Let me see, Bob Kincaid. Okay. The subject line is House, and I'm sending it to you now. They're already, the GOP House members are already choosing not to run.
Dropping like flies.
Oh, yes, but it's going to get worse, and I just sent you the link. It's a Politico article.
Yeah.
And this is not to take anything for granted, because you must never do that. But if we play our cards right, this thing is eminently doable. Keeping the House, retaking the Senate, and getting a candidate in there who can become sworn in as the next president on January 20th, the year 2021, if we make it up to that point. That's going to be a crapshoot. But providing the planets are in alignment, and we haven't done ourselves in between now and then, it's eminently doable, but we've got to do it. And we've got to do it as if every fucking thing in the world is counting upon the doing of it. It's that thing about the stack of chips at the center of the Greenfelt covered table. Somebody's going to win those chips, and it better be us. So... God. Well, I'm glad we were able to talk today. I thought about calling the other day, and I said, well, let's wait till the second debate's over, and maybe that will be an auspicious time to crawl over to the phone and hit redial or whatever. And now I'm just shagged out. Now I want bacon. Send me bacon, Bob. Send me hot. Send me flapjacks.
Hot sizzling bacon. Yes. And the other thing is the Pepperidge Farm guy, whichever bread truck that is, brings their day old stuff up to
Pepperidge
the Wiggling Pig.
Farm remembers.
Yeah, they bring their day old stuff up to the Wiggling Pig, and I get it for a buck a loaf. And they've got Hearty Farmhouse White, and Hearty Sourdough, and Hearty Oatmeal, and man, it makes the best toast for those BLTs.
That must be an east of the Mississippi thing, because I, now that you mentioned Pepperidge Farm, remembers, I don't think I've seen Pepperidge Farm products out here.
Well, it's all owned now by a massive baking consortium out of Mexico City.
Oh. Is it still as good as it used to? Because I used to
that's the thing. I get it for a buck a loaf, and it's great, even though it's like, you know, day-old bread.
Do they still make those loaves of teeny tiny bread slices?
Oh, you mean the cocktail rye and the cocktail pumpernickel?
Oh yes. Do they still make that?
Well, they do, but you only see it, for the most part, you only see it around the holidays.
Huh.
Because everybody puts it out with their, you know, little cheese trays and whatnot. Yeah.
Oh, but you could make, and I think they even had recipes on the packaging, with the pumpernickel, little teeny tiny bread slices, pumpernickel, and on top of it, you would take cream cheese and finely chopped up walnuts or something, and pureed dates or something, and mix all that together in a big bowl, and spread a little layer on the little teeny tiny slice of pumpernickel, and then put another slice on top, and then put one of those fancy toothpicks with the cellophane, the multicolored cellophane. Mm-hmm. Oh, God. God. Now I'm going to faint dead away now, Bob, because I am so hungry.
Well, with the griddle, what I love is that, because, you know, you get all that bacon grease there. And of course, that's seasoned it and everything. So you lay the slice of bread down, and you just sort of ski it through the bacon grease, and then put it up on a relatively dry part of the griddle, And so you got the bread toasted in it, you got the bacon. Then you know you've got then you know like in Ferg's case the fried egg, and it is just it's a bacon wonderland of a sandwich, because both sides of the bread are toasted in that bacony goodness.
Well, hey, but if this radio thing doesn't work out, Bob's Bacon Wonderland coming to a street corner near you.
Yeah, if I could figure out a way to get me some some Benton's bacon in here, I'd be unbearable.
Ooh, how about grilled cheese? Have you tried crafting grilled cheese?
I've been so wrapped up in the BLTs, I haven't. But I've got my good Amish hot pepper cheese in the fridge. But I want to get over to Kroger's to get some of that Gold Miner sourdough.
Oh yeah, yeah. Which I tried thanks to you, and it's everything that you said and more.
Isn't it wonderful?
Oh God. And I had a digital coupon, plus the loaf was like a day old situation or 2 days old situation. So it was $3 off plus the dollar off coupon. I think they had to give it to me. They had to pay me to take it, I think is how that worked out.
Well, that gold miner stuff in particular, they've got an onion sourdough.
Now, I didn't try that one yet.
Oh, for a grilled cheese. Oh, yes. Yes, Lord, yes.
Oh, dear. Well, I may not have the strength to hang up, Bob, after this, because now I'm shagged out completely. I should have.
And next time you're at Ralph's, Kroger's, one last thing. Go to the deli, see if they've got it, because they've got it here. In the private selection label, they've got a Nashville hot cold cut chicken. And that wonderful spice blend goes all the way through the chicken. I get it sliced, it's not shaved, but it's, you know, it still holds up as a slice, but about as thin as they can get it and have it still be a slice.
Like a thin deli slice.
Yeah, and put that on with your grilled cheese. Ooh.
Oh, mercy.
Yeah. And a good pickle mercy. And a good pickle off to the side and a bowl of tomato soup.
Yeah. Well, the only pickles I will eat, the only ones I will allow into the house are what are those refrigerated pickles?
Clausen's. Yeah.
Oh, God, I love Clausen pickles. And they're so sodium heavy, I shouldn't have them anywhere near me.
Yeah.
But I do occasionally.
Well, in Ralph's, if you look over in where the tofu and the organic natural foods and stuff is and the kombucha and whatnot, I can't remember the name of it, but there's a brand of pickle over there that will just blow your mind. It's like Clausen's. Squared.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, crispy and just pickly and it's got the live probiotics in it, like the kraut that Steve from Georgia stands so fond of.
Oh yeah, yeah. And it's not refrigerated. It's on.
Yeah, no,
the
it's refrigerated. No, it's refrigerated.
It?
It's refrigerated over where the tofu is, and the kimchi.
Okay. Well, I'll look for that. I'll look for that.
All right, Scott, well, have yourself a good evening. And I was a little bit worried about you. I was afraid maybe you'd gotten sick or something because Sparky got food poisoning, Steve got food poisoning, and I wasn't anywhere near either of them.
Well, last week was, I'll tell you just in a nutshell what it was, part of it. Last week, it was so hot here, and it wasn't just the heat. I can deal with that. But the humidity was ungodly high for this part of the world. And I don't have AC, and then my fan died, so I had to scurry and get a replacement fan, which has been working wonderfully. But even that has limits when the humidity is so high and you're not used to it. And I don't do well in real, real hot weather or real, real cold weather as it is, you know. So for that week, I was pretty much out of commission doing just the bare essentials. And this week it's been a lot better. And, also they're taking their good sweet time in resolving this Medicare Part B, who gets to pay the premium annual pissing match. And I it's been on my mind. So I've been kind of in your old proverbial blue funk on top of it.
Yeah, I understand.
But on the positive side, I've got Chirps the cat here, who is a happy cat. I've got the squirrels coming around trying to jump on me. I've got, you know, so much going on in life that is working. And sometimes it's just the little things. So I'll try not to be so much of a stranger now that we're in a new month. I always like the new month, Bob, because it's a brand new month where anything wonderful can happen. That's got to be my attitude. So, and we'll have 31 days.
And you know, it would be wonderful if we weren't still at zero for the challenge for this evening, but we are. So.
Oh well, what is the? I missed the.
The first of the month challenge, Bruce's Memorial Challenge.
Oh yeah.
There's 200 bucks on the table and zero to go with it.
Well,
that's a little worrisome.
If I tell you what, man, if they can get it resolved on my end with this Medicare Part B, because normally they send me back several months worth of premiums that I paid and shouldn't have.
Oh, I'm not leaning on you. No.
Oh no, I know you're not. But I see, that's the other thing. I always like to participate, not just with what I have to say or write in the emails, but I also like to support the damn work. Because it's valuable work, okay? I've said that all along. So hopefully everything will come into alignment in August, and things will begin. Mercury has been in retrograde.
Well, that explains it.
Well, no, a friend of mine out in the Midwest is a professional psychic person, and she knows her shit when it comes to the Mercury being in retrograde.
How many times has she won the lottery?
I don't know, but I've got another friend who's made a handy living on accurately doing the pick three a couple of times a week. And he told me how to do it, and I haven't been able to get it to work, but I try it from time to time.
Well, shoot me an email. Let's see if it works in West Virginia.
Well, they do pick threes there as well.
Yes, they do.
I will. As a matter of fact, it'd probably be easier to talk to you offline sometime and explain the way he explained it to me. And maybe that's, do you have any psychic ability to speak of?
No. If I had a superpower, it'd be something really boring. Like, you know, the ability to always find the other sock.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you lose a sock, it comes back as a Tupperware lid that doesn't fit anything. I mean to burst your bubble, but that's how that works.
Well, that's probably true. There's an old bit in a play by Jules Pfeiffer, a series of vignettes. The play is called Hold Me. And you know, people, you know who Jules Pfeiffer is.
Oh, yes, God, yes.
Well, these are written cartoons, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, a character walks on the stage and says, "So I go to the laundromat. I put in 14 pairs of socks. I get back 12 pairs of socks and one red sock and one blue sock. The next week, I go to the laundromat and I put in 12 pairs of socks. I get back 9 pairs of socks, one striped green sock, one pink sock with stars on it, and one yellow sock. I go back to the laundry. I put in 8 pairs of socks. I get back 5 pairs of socks, one orange sock and one purple sock. The next week, I go back to the laundry, and I put in no socks. Out of the dryer, I pull a body stocking with a note attached that says, "Quit trifling with the laws of the universe and bring the machine more socks."
God, Jules Pfeiffer, that's a name I haven't heard in years.
That's a delightful little play just to sit and read.
Yeah. And then, what's it called? Hold Me?
Yeah, Hold Me.
I will look for that. As a matter of fact, I will definitely look for that because I'm a fan of Gene Shepard, and I think he and Jules Pfeiffer were pals, professionally and otherwise. So, because his mind worked a lot like Shepard's did. God, don't get me started on that. I hate long goodbyes anyway. Goodbye, Bob.
Oh, goodbye. Goodbye, Scott. Goodbye.
All right.
Later.
Take care. I won't be a stranger so much in the future.
All right. We'll see you. Bye now.
Take care, man. Bye-bye.
And thanks. Thanks very kindly for reminding me. I'm not getting my, apparently this is another one of those evenings where I'm not getting updates from through my email of what happens over at PayPal. I was wrong. We are off the schneid. Thank you very kindly to Kat in Ohio, and thank you very kindly to another individual. That means we're Steve in New York's challenge has been met, and so we are a total, well, we've only got $100 to go, it turns out. My apologies. There you go. You count on something like email to work, and then it doesn't. But thank you. Thank you to Kat and Steve and our anonymous friend for another anonymous friend. Some people don't like having their names called, and that's okay. So we're $100 away from finishing Bruce's Memorial Challenge, and we've got about 40 minutes to do that in. Thank you very, very kindly. So it's not as terrifying as it was. 10 more people at $10 can turn their $10 into 20. That's how that works. So thank you. Thank you again. Let's see. Before we go back to the phones, a couple of emails. Suman writes, subject line, goddamn donut hole. I hear the candidates talk about all kinds of big ideas. Nothing wrong with that, but I just wonder how practical they are, given the abundance of morons everywhere. And you know what? You cannot overstate the impact of morons on American public policy. You got half the country screaming socialism about the idea of expanding a pre-existing plan or a pre-existing program that the American people, almost down to the last person, freaking adore, namely, Medicare. So yeah, Suman's got got his finger on the pulse. At one point, there was a lot of talk. Suman says a lot of talk about, one, closing the effing donut hole. Two, subsidize the common procedures. A simple percentile computation will work for this. Three, increase the federal poverty rate to a point where everyone qualifies. Four, create a public option. Five, pay hospitals and insurance companies based on risk outcomes. Somehow this seems to have fallen off the radar. Again, I'm not asking to stop thinking big, but how about starting from a practical standpoint? I'm curious to know what the community thinks. I don't think there's really a hell of a lot to fight about in that. Closing the donut hole, I think encompassed in the Medicare for All talk are many of these things. The subsidies for common procedures, closing the donut hole, and as far as increasing the federal poverty rate, that was the heart and soul of the Medicaid expansion. Namely, that Medicaid eligibility was run up to 138% of the federal poverty rate. And the idea being, if the Democrats could have hung on to the Congress and the presidency, that over time, that would have been expanded upwards. You know, from 138 to 150, 150 to 182, 182 to 200% of the poverty rate. And at that point in time, you've got a shitload of America covered, including but not limited to, you know, me. I think those things are all important. And again, what Lady B brought to the fore last night, the fact that states that rejected the Medicaid expansion are watching their rural hospitals dry up and blow away. And you know what? When it's mortality numbers, I suspect, increase dramatically with the length of the ambulance ride, especially in rural America. It takes X time to get from the ambulance station to the address, and then it takes time to get from the address to the hospital. And in most instances, every second counts in those circumstances. Ron in Raleigh said, imagine, how do you think Trump would act with a Democratic House and Senate? I believe his shit-talking days would be over. Oh, I don't think his shit-talking days are going to be over until his days are over. He's going to go screaming into the dirt. And, by the way, he's so crooked, they'll have to screw him into the dirt. Like a fucking corkscrew. No, I think he would. I think he would, because you can't make him shut up. That's why they would not let him testify. That's why they would not let him be questioned under oath by Mueller, because if you recall, Rudy Giuliani said it would be a perjury trap, which is another way of saying that Donald Trump cannot help but lie compulsively and pathologically. Also with Pepperidge Farm, I love the things we connect with. Ron says, I was at one time the Pepperidge Farm warehouse man here in Raleigh. The cookies and crackers guys make amazing money. They pass their roots down to family members. The bread guys don't make as much, plus their product doesn't last nearly as long, so they're constantly changing out product. I used to bring boxes of bread home. And it's great bread. I mean, I really do. The sourdough isn't as sourdough as what the gold miner is, but it's still top-notch. And for a buck a loaf, what's not to love? And within the context of my own personal hang-ups, Pepperidge Farm doesn't use high fructose corn syrup in its bread recipes. Yay. So that that pretty much brings us up to date, except for one thing. Namely, and I'll try to get to this before the end of the program. I've got a note from our buddy Terrace that I want to make sure we share. But for now, let's run over and up to lovely summertime Wisconsin and check in with Flavio. Hey, Flavio.
And we call it Mississippi.
Yes, Mississippi. Alabama, yeah. Alabama with better cheese.
Yeah, really. Wow. Yeah, when he goes, I think they should drive a stake through his heart just to make sure, you know.
Yeah, and you know, line the grave with garlic, and then garlic over top.
Exactly, and then salt the earth on top of it too.
Yeah.
To make sure.
And maybe let some little immigrant children go pee-pee on top of it.
Yeah, there you go. Great idea. But any chance of getting the for-profit media out of the business of moderating debates?
No. Because
how did that happen again? How did it go from the League of Women Voters? What was the story about?
Well, the League of Women Voters was involved in, because we didn't used to have political party debates. See, these are entertainments, Flavio. These are not important public policy disputations. These are entertainments. That's why there were ads throughout them.
Correct. But
they
I
are
mean,
not, they, and you know, they're run on largely cable networks, and mm-hmm. that means that there's no obligation for public service, and so you know, it's $100,000 a minute, or something like that, or more.
But how did it go from the League of Women Voters? Because I remember those. I remember those when they were hosted by the League of Women Voters.
Those were presidential debates. Those were the Republican versus the Democrat. And right. they may still. But it went over to, because there was a dollar to be made. And the League of Women Voters weren't out there trying to finance a ski chalet in Aspen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it was just nauseating. Really, I mean, just the first debate, the way it opened, you had to rub your eyes because what is this? like you said, we're all Wrestling Entertainment Incorporated, you know?
Yeah. No, WWE. It was maddening. It was like, and the other thing is, not particularly valuable, useful, or well performed.
No, I mean,
how do you go through that entire first pageant night before last and not ask about the little kids in the cages?
Well, it took 2 hours to talk about black people, and Puerto Rico wasn't mentioned once.
And right, so
cages.
I mean, we could take 18 hours talking about the racism of Donald Trump, and it still wouldn't be enough to catalog it all. So I don't begrudge that particular issue. But the fact of the matter is, the time what annoyed the shit out of me in both nights is the time they spent trying to get one candidate to attack another. You know, the professional wrestling aspect. And every time those multimillionaires did that, that was more time where other issues went begging. Like, well, you know, they didn't ask any Mitch McConnell questions last night. And so eventually Julian Castro finally says Moscow Mitch.
He did. That was good. I remember that.
He's polished. He's talented. He has real political skills within the bureaucratic American framework of it. I wish Governor Inslee was getting more traction. For the sake of the species, I wish he was getting more traction. And as much as I like him, he didn't come off with the polish or the piss and vinegar of some of the other candidates.
Well, what did someone say? You don't come with spreadsheets and clipboards to a knife fight.
No, and I don't think that's what he was doing, so much as it was just how he presented. He came across, and no offense, as the Great Northwest guy he is. He's mellow. I mean, he recognizes that we are in an existential crisis, but he's kind of chill with it. He's not going to run screaming around the debate stage with his hair on fire, because he understands that panic serves no purpose except to make matters worse as opposed to being better. But frankly, I think the multimillionaire for-profit media and the political chattering class want people running with their hair on fire. They love those moments of snark and snipe. And yeah. So that inures to our detriment.
Right, and, you know, I wanted to say this. You know, I used to be smitten with Tulsi. I mean, she's got it, you know. She's attractive, and but you don't vote for a person. You don't vote for that. I mean, you should vote.
Oh,
for...
you know what? I mean, I love her voice.
She's got a lovely voice.
What do you call that? Is that a contralto?
I think you might be right. I'm you'd have to ask my sister. She's a alto soprano.
But the policy goes straight to hell.
And then you know I she was how many times on RT and then the other day how many times she's on Fox, and then the other day she was in Tucker Carlson's White Power Hour.
Right, prior to the inauguration, going to kiss the ring at Trump Tower.
Yeah, I mean that you know, that's not, you don't do that. I mean, I'll be honest with you. Even though he carried it off and he wasn't hurt too bad by it, I was kind of disappointed in Bernie for going on Fox. I was really proud of Elizabeth Warren for not doing that, for refusing.
Okay? Yeah, if they want to find out, let them change the goddamn channel.
Moral
and if you
clarity.
Won't, and if you won't change the fucking channel, you're probably not worth talking to, because you're not even remotely a potential voter.
Yeah,
you're just a maggot.
Yeah, I didn't get that, you know, and I heard it. I mean, I saw clips of it online. I guess he did well. He didn't let them talk over him.
No, but then exactly what Elizabeth Warren said would come next happened. They spent the next 24-hour news cycle talking about what a commie he is.
Mm-hmm.
And the rules of primacy and recency suggest that that is what stays in, you know, that's what stays in the minds of Emery and Marvelline sitting there in their matching Barca loungers in the double wide watching Fox. What they heard what they heard most lately. And so, after Bernie's
proud.
Appearance, it was commie.
I was really proud of Elizabeth Warren when she said no. And really disappointed in the other candidates that, you know, just gleefully went along. And I'm thinking, you know, Elizabeth Warren said no, and I said, you know, hooray for moral clarity.
Okay, so let's play a little hypothetical game here, Flavio. Let's say that in the upcoming Wisconsin primary, you would have ranked choice voting. How would you rank the candidates at this point in time? Who's your first, second, third, fourth, fifth? With the understanding, as it was noted on multiple occasions last night, any one of those people on the stage would do a better job than Donald Trump.
What is ranked choice voting again?
Well, that's where you vote by ranking your preferences, candidate one, candidate two, candidate three, candidate four.
Which one?
So, never mind the mechanics. Who's Let's say, you know, who's your one and who's your eight?
Okay.
So go one.
My,
you know, just start with one and go
one
on down.
My one is Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, I hate to say it, Kamala Harris. And then Cory Booker. And Joe Biden, sure. Why not?
Okay, because I've been sort of tinkering my list. I'm Elizabeth Warren at one. Jay Inslee at two,
mm-hmm.
because the climate crisis really does matter to me. If things were slightly different, Inslee might be number one. But Elizabeth Warren, Jay Inslee, probably Cory Booker. Then Bernie. Then Bernie, four. Julian Castro, five. Pete Buttigieg, six. Maybe Steve Bullock, seven.
Okay.
And then the bottom of the list would be Kirsten Gillibrand. I don't know if... I think I would put Tulsi, Marianne Williams at my absolute bottom. Andrew Yang, one notch above that. Tulsi, no. Dead last, Marianne Williamson. Tulsi. Andrew Yang. Joe. No. Amy Klobuchar, then Joe.
Yeah, we basically coincide. I mean, the point is, you can't worry about, oh, what are they going to do to him? It's like Pete Buttigieg said something very.
He was absolutely right. Whoever it is.
No matter who you choose, and even if they put in a conservative Dem, they put in a liberal Dem.
John Delaney would find himself shocked if he were the nominee to see attack ads run calling him a socialist.
You know they
because
would.
They will do it. Now, so it I mean, there are some things that we know. They're gonna Pocahontas Elizabeth Warren. They are absolutely itching to run that video footage of Bernie sitting in his tidy whiteies in Russia, toasting his hosts. And that'll be worse than Michael Dukakis in the tank, or John Kerry in the sperm suit.
Mm-hmm.
It'll crush him. Because a visual like that has tremendous power, and I'm not trying to piss off the community. I'm just trying to do that whole reality spoken here kind of thing.
Yeah. It doesn't matter which candidate they're going to find.
Pete Buttigieg. They will holler gay until it can be heard on Norblap 9.
And they'll use the F word.
And of course the snide allusions to race that will touch both Kamala and Cory Booker.
And Kamala isn't a real African.
Well, no, I'm not gonna judge anybody's bona fides.
That's gonna go.
Sure, I mean, she was related to a white slave owner. Well, that's only because old Marsh went down to the quarters and raped one of his slave women. Okay. Yeah. They're not subject to nuance like that.
No.
Amy Klobuchar will be surprised to find herself, a full on card carrying. Molotov cocktail throwing Bolshevik.
Klobuchar is a Bolshevik. I'm from this area.
I know, but isn't that? I mean, I loved the laugh I got out of you for that.
No, I mean, my. Yeah. Ooh, that's good.
Lev Klobuchar, you know.
Yeah. Ooh. No, I'm from this area.
Amy Klobuchatsky. Che Klobuchar.
Yeah, really. I mean, that would...
Alos Bericatis. Oh God, yeah, I know. I mean, it's important to acknowledge that they're all going to get it.
That would be if Ron Kind was the senator here, if Ron Kind were called a Bolshevik, that's about as funny as it gets. I mean, if Ron Kind was running, but he isn't. But that's like calling Amy Klobuchar a Bolshevik is like calling Ron Kind a Bolshevik, or for that matter, Joe Manchin.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, right. Because, you know, for some reason or another, there are these women in the Senate who wind up being like Joe Manchin, only Joe Manchin has better hair.
Mm-hmm.
And I think back to Blanche Lincoln from Arkansas and Claire McCaskill, formerly of Missouri, and, well, Amy Klobuchar. This is not to say that there aren't good things to say about her.
No, there are good things to say about her, but call her a Bolshevik.
I know. It'd be like calling
Joe Manchin a Bolshevik. Or Ron Klein.
Or calling Bernie a Republican.
Yeah. Or, oh, God. Who is that senator that...
But, yeah, you get...
Herb Cole. Yeah. Calling Herb Cole a socialist.
But you get the idea.
Yeah.
And they will. And you know, what Suman was saying earlier about, you know, the moron factor cannot be dismissed.
No.
In this context.
But what do you think? Did you see the headline in the New York Times? And Biden won the debate.
Yeah. But I also saw the David Brooks column that Marianne Williams, to the effect of Marianne Williamson knows how to beat Trump.
Ooh. Who said that?
David Brooks.
David Brooks.
Yeah, David Brooks, who loses a fight with a stopped clock, because even a stopped clock is right twice a day. David Brooks isn't.
God. Well, yeah, David Brooks is in a class all by himself, I think.
Well, I mean, there's him, there's Maureen Dowd, there's Thomas Friedman. You know. And now, of course, that young whippersnapper, Brett Stevens, who made his bones by saying that college rape isn't much of a problem and climate change is a big fake.
God.
Yeah.
So what are the chances that, I mean, I'm hopeful for Michigan, but I don't think we'll ever get the assembly, the Wisconsin assembly back.
Yeah, because of the gerrymandering?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, all you can do, you can't give up, and everything is tied to get out the vote. And that's,
you mean,
the,
you can beat a gerrymander with massive turnout?
Yeah, but it has to be historic and almost unprecedented.
So you're saying that I don't understand how these things work very well, but you're saying that a massive turnout can turn
you've got to figure out a way to keep the assholes home and get a massive turnout on your own side. You know, Kirsten Gillibrand talks about the fact that she won two terms in the House in a district that was 2-1 Republicans. It, you know, kind of can be done.
But you really, come on, do you really think she kept rifles under her bed?
I'm taking her at her word. I mean, we know she damn well cashed the checks from the NRA.
But I mean, yeah, wow. Yeah, the thought of that, you know, because of all the headlines that you hear about, you know, little kids blowing themselves up, you know, and shooting, picking up a gun and shooting a sibling, you know.
Right.
All those headlines, you know, and I mean, she must love her kids just like anyone else loves their kids, except that idiot that left the twins in the car. But what was it with that? I didn't quite understand that story. How can you forget twins in a car? Did you hear about that?
Yeah. I know. I've ceased to be shocked or surprised by the depths of the stupidity of the American people. I mean, the last time Agnes and I were on the road together, I think we were traveling through Virginia, over toward coastal Virginia, I don't know where it was, but you know, the big digital sign, the message boards over highways that we have now, constant reminders, hey, don't forget to look in the back seat to see if your kid's there. Don't leave your kid in the car.
Oh, God.
We're there. It's who we are.
Yeah, no, I mean, you have to be on some really heavy stupefacients.
Hey, that's a good word, stupefacients.
To forget that you have kids.
Well, consider, you know, consider the woman in Texas the other night. Stopped to pick up her boyfriend at the bar. He worked at the bar. And left her kid in the car with the engine running. And while she was waiting, and just, you know, went into the bar. Because, you know, can't take the kid in the car. It's a baby. And so she sat down and started doing shots. And the next thing, she's at 0.1487 on the breathalyzer. Told the cop she had two shots. But the two shots, I guess, were triples. You get the idea. Hey, Flavio, I got to get out of here, Flavio. I got to wrap it up for the evening. But I'm so glad you called in.
Yeah, I know. I try. I'm glad I got in, and I'm praying. I hope that the abstentionism goes down, and everybody get out there and vote. You know?
Yeah.
Because this is life or death. It really is. I mean, this country cannot survive another term of this canker. Can I just say one thing?
Yeah, go ahead.
Did you see what John Legend? I like.
Oh, he tore in. Yeah.
He just, he was a canker. He called him a canker. Ow.
Yeah, I saw that and I thought, geez, that's pretty good. And then I thought, wait a minute, somebody would have to tell Trump what a canker is.
Yeah, oh Jesus, it's Shakespearean. And the thing is that, you know, I usually think of him as a very reserved guy, John Legend. He's like kind of artsy fartsy and not very.
Yeah, but we're past the age of reserve. We're living in the world of that bumper sticker that says if you're not outraged you're not paying attention.
Exactly, and I loved him for it, and I was reminded when I liked that guy, and I went and I listened to some old stuff I have of his, and yeah. Well, I'll let you go, man. Thank you, and again, people, get out there and vote. We can't survive another term. This guy.
Nope.
You
know? We gotta be smart enough to do the right thing. Hint. All right. The right thing is, you know, voting for whoever the nominee is.
Whoever it is.
Yeah.
Right. You have yourself a good night and say hello to Agnes for me.
Will do. Flavio, you stay cool in that blazing Wisconsin heat.
All right,
take care, man.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Everybody, Flavio, up in far La Crosse. I said we got a note from Terrace. This is a good one, and it's a good one. We'll wrap up the program with a few notes. They're killing us. Terrace says, I don't have the skill or time to write an email approaching the quality or insight of Lady B's masterpieces. Oh, I think you'll do fine, Terrace. This is the best I can do. Please forgive my lack of fortitude to proofread. The San Francisco Bay Area tech community looks down on Gilroy, California. A sprawling city surrounded by dirt, trucks, and fast food. I know this because I was a kid in California's Central Valley, which is still pockmarked by inequality. Rural California is the butt of every rich liberal Californian's joke. Tech companies behave as if rural California doesn't exist despite its superior affordability, seemingly endless empty land, and large population that is well served by many educational institutions. Big tech money will never build between San Jose and Santa Monica, which is probably best for California's water resources and ecology, but I digress. Tech workers are economically better off compared to most Americans in other industries. The vast majority of tech workers have no sympathy for or even awareness of those who keep their communities intact while being paid virtually nothing. Tech workers only want to pay less tax and receive their online purchases as soon as possible. But that's not what Sunday's attack at the Gilroy Garlic Festival was about.
The causes of the attack were, as usual, racism and misogyny. Ironically, the shooter honed his hate via the technology invented by many Bay Area tech workers who unwittingly made 8chan, Gab, Discord, and secret Facebook hate groups possible. Very little is being done by big tech to stop online recruitment for today's violent and racist Republican Party. Another radicalized white supremacist teenager murdered, among others, a 6-year-old Latino American last Sunday. The shooter did not instead shoot me dead on California Street in San Francisco. Despite his rhetoric about economic anxiety and limousine liberals, I was not his target because I'm a white male. But the time will come. Our safety is merely virtual. They are literally killing us. Nothing is being done to stop them. A lot of sobering facts in there. So I guess Terrace is saying that even California has its hillbillies. And like hillbillies everywhere, they get sneered at. Todd in South Carolina stands, says, please tell Flavio hi. Hi, Flavio, from Todd. Renee with a note. Practically a natural law. It doesn't matter what the GOP says about any Dem because they're worse than the yellowest dog Dem. My guess is Dems go 100% for the Dem nominee. This time around, it's undeniable. Dems aren't worse than Trump. And, of course, absolutely true. And one of the things that came out of last night's pageant is, what the fuck are we doing? Are y'all doing tearing into Barack Obama? Because there are a lot of people that's going to piss right off. Maybe some of the people doing it were figuring it was their only hope. If so, that's a thin reed to hang it on. And a rather horrible strategy. We can acknowledge the shortcomings of the administration, but to even begin to critique that administration in the same breath with mentioning the full blossom of fascism in which we are living now, it is to be profoundly short on perspective. David in South Carolina Stan says, and Donald Trump will be immune from mocking disabled people, sexual assault, conspiring an attack on the USA. Precisely. I-O-K. I-Y-A-R. James in Illinois, 60 fucking imaginary senators. I heard Julian Castro today repeating that Republican talking point with regard to comprehensive immigration reform that did not happen in Obama's first term. I guess he was counting on Ben Nelson, Joe Lieberman, Blanche Lincoln, Evan Bay, Mary Landrieu, and Max Baucus. The dying Ted Kennedy and Al Franken never met as seated senators. There was so much effort going into the ACA that immigration was not attempted, nor was card check. Either one was going to be talked and amended to death. That's how legislation dies in the Senate. So for Castro to castigate the 111th Congress for not getting it done, he's just doing the Republicans' work for them. And that's the thing. The House got their, in that Congress, the House got their work done. And it did, and their work went over to the Senate and died. It died largely at the hands of Mitch McConnell, even though he was running the minority. He dog-walked poor old Harry Reid. But those the things like card check were done in at the connivance, again, of people like Mary Landrieu, Blanche Lincoln, and Ben Nelson. Because they said, well, you know, now that the Bush crashed economy has really come home to roost, we can't be doing decent things for working people in this country. Blame needs to land on target, not in the general neighborhood. So that's it. Thank you very kindly to everyone who jumped in on the challenge this evening. We will go to I'll upload the podcast, and we'll hope that the overnight crew will make up the other $100 so that we can be qualified for the challenge by the time tomorrow evening's program rolls around Friday on the front porch. So thank you, one and all, who keep this program on the air. You know, we may have, Bob in North Carolina was pointing out to me, I need to go through and do a count. We may have actually achieved the happy 100 as far as subscribers go. And if that's the case, then we're working on the, refer to it as? Let me check here real quick. Just got to, we'll take a couple of minutes. Where did it? We may be working on moving toward 200 subscribers, the ultimate goal being 400. So if you'd like to be a subscriber, sign up at either Patreon or PayPal. Either one works, and it will be deeply appreciated. And in the meantime, 10 folks at $10 from the overnight crew will go a long way. It'll meet that challenge. Note coming in from Lady B. Ree Terrace. One word. Wow. Yeah, I told Terrace was sandbagging a little bit at the front end of that email. I'm lucky. I'm lucky in the richness of the ideas that I get from and the conversation online and off that I get from this community. It keeps my mind in a constant state of process. Terrific 200, asks Randy in PA. Yeah, that could be it. That could be it. So thanks all of you for keeping the program on the air from one month to the next. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks earlier to Steve and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Brother Deacon Asa busted me earlier in the program saying, I see you took the entire filibuster to crap all over carbon capture, Kincaid. What I find curious is that you didn't delegate a single minute to talk about beautiful clean coal. Makes me wonder what you're trying to hide from us. Oh, I ain't trying to hide. I despise the stuff, and clean coal is an advertising slogan. Not anything resembling a reflection of reality. Thanks, Asa. Thanks to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, celebrating the 20th anniversary at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina. It's all for you. Later, y'all.